Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
1380 WAOK.
Good morning. It's time for the movement.
Good afternoon, y'all.
Are you down?
Good evening.
Are you down?
Let's go.
Are you down? Are you down? Are you down, down, down with the movement? It's the movement. Are you down?
Are you down?
Are you down, down, down with the movement?
Without the FFQ
starter. Now open up your ears, so much to hear. There's nothing to fear.
On this radio,
WAOK. There's chatter and laughter. Sometimes there's good things going down.
Are you down?
Sometimes there's bad things going down.
Down, down.
So open up your mind as we talk about the times. And if you wanna call in. On 1380, and you can talk about the movement with Dr. F and Keith Slaughter.
Dr. F. Keith Slaughter. First and foremost, black people, if you listen to that name, you hear that name, Dr. F. Keith Slaughter.
To tell me Essex, England is down with the movement.
Oh my goodness, it's so down you can't get any deeper.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community. Your brother, Dr. F.T. Slaughter, up in here getting it in from 7 to 10, exactly where I'm supposed to do it across from me. My DJ, DJ JD, Smooth Criminal, the place to be. We up in here making it do what it do. And as promised, today is a special, special show. This is a special edition of the movement with Dr. F.T. Slaughter because, not because of me, but because of our special guest who is exclusively on the Black Line or the Blackest Show on radio. Ladies and gentlemen, sisters and brothers, I want you to put your hands together for author, activist, entrepreneur, and beautiful black man, Dr. Claude Anderson. Doc. Dr. Anderson.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How you doing? You still like you was earlier?
Yeah. It's cold up here. I wish I was down there where you all. I know it's about 75, 80 degrees down there.
Not quite, but it's good, close to 60, though.
That's better than 25.
That's why they call it Hot Atlanta, Doc. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, we keep it warm. Look, I was telling you when we were speaking earlier that for about the last 3 or 4 months, on Monday through Thursday, we have been sharing out of the 101 questions that are found in a Black History Reader, 101 questions you never thought to ask. We've engaged each question up to question number 26. And my listeners look forward each and every day to hearing the next question because these questions are pointed and they are prolific and they look directly at what's going on with black people. Now, go ahead. Sir?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
I'm listening to you.
Okay. So, and I must admit, Doc, this is a powerful text, this Black History Reader. It's asking some questions that we just tend not to ask and tend not to want to ask and tend not to want to know the answer to. What is it that caused you to write this Black History Reader? What was the impetus for you doing that?
Well, to be honest with you, I felt some obligations. Because, see, first of all, I felt that I had been uniquely privileged through, I guess, most of my years, to be able to acquire experiences and educational learning circumstances mm-hmm. that most 90% of black folk have never had the opportunities to be exposed to, nor ever they will have. Mm-hmm. I've been at the highest levels of government, with presidents and governors. I head up trade missions to third world nations. I was over education with the state of Florida for about 70 years. I ran campaigns. I was a campaign manager with two presidents. First being Jimmy Carter, ran his campaign in the South and in Florida. Mm-hmm. I've been, and also with Clinton. I've been in my experience in the Marine Corps as a flight equipment engineer. And even though I'm a pilot, but I don't fly anymore. And I can go on and on, having been assistant secretary in commerce, and also being the only black that's ever been a chairman for economic development. I felt I owed black folks something mm-hmm. because 90% of the information they were getting from either the white society and all these fabricated groups of minorities, they are being bamboozled and misled and taken down the wrong path. And earlier, I started telling black folk that back during the civil rights movement in the 1960s, after you're going the wrong way, social integration is not your problem. Your problem, your first obligation should be to identify and correct the purposes of slavery. That's what you should be focusing on. What was the primary purpose? The purpose of slavery, Dr. Slaughter, was to systematically maldistribute almost 100% of all this nation's land, mm-hmm. wealth, businesses, power, resources, minerals, businesses, income, rights and privileges and controls of all levels of government into the hands of the dominant white society. Blacks are playing with a stacked deck. They cannot win. They only control one half, not more than one half or 1% of anything of value. That's why they're heading to be destined to be wiped out. And I feel an obligation to do it, to go against the mainstream of all these blacks now who've been bought into this social movement, mm-hmm. the correctness movement. And it's trying to save the world instead of saving their own people. That's why I got into it. That's why I've been writing books. And my books are classics all around the world for black folk.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I want to get, since I got you an hour, you know, but it's a radio hour. I want you to kind of familiarize us with where you come from. You know, where you're born and who your people is, you know, so we can kind of contextualize some of the things that you share with us.
Okay, that I appreciate that, and I respect you for that. I was mm-hmm. born in McCormick, South Carolina.
Okay.
And I was either blessed or abused by having somewhat a mixture in my family at that particular time in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. We had owned land. But the whites wanted us out of that land because my grandmother was Odessa was mixed with Indians, mm-hmm. and so they ran us out of South Carolina, McCormick, by flooding the river, dammed up the river, mm-hmm. because my grandfather, we owned 1,500 acres of land, so they took the land from us and forced us out of South Carolina. And I learned a lesson there very young. Now we had to move to North Carolina, Winston-Salem. There, mm-hmm. our family got engaged in starting to have two of the major businesses in Winston-Salem. We are part owners, which is a fourth family ownership, of the only black bus line that a black folk have ever had in America. That was a Safe Bus Company in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We didn't have one or two buses. We had over 500 buses.
My goodness.
All the bus drivers, the attendees, administration, mechanics, electricians, were all blacks. Mm-hmm. And our bus line didn't just service the black community. It serviced the white communities, too. Mm-hmm. But it got destroyed with the civil rights movement, destroyed it. When they started trying to integrate the Montgomery, Alabama bus line, instead of owning the buses like we had in Winston-Salem, they wanted to just ride on white buses. And also, I learned at that point in time with my grandmother, and I got into the early elementary school, I learned another lesson when she told us about education. Mm-hmm. When she was 99 years of age, and I said, "What do you want for your birthday?" I said, "First, how do you feel?" She said, "The body is strong, but the mind is strong, but the body is weak."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "What would you like for your birthday?" She said, "I'd like to see the inside of a school." I'd never been to school a day in her life. My mother only got to the fifth grade. My dad got to the third grade because whites did not allow them in the South Carolina at that time to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Then I found out when my aunt died, I found out about the value of money. She died. She was about 112, somewhere around 12, 110 years of age then. She died, and nobody could bury it. I didn't have any money. I was a young kid then. I went down to Social Security office, and they gave me $250 to bury her.
Mm.
And I took $250 to bury her by going to a funeral home, getting a funeral home, and convincing him to give him $100 out of that $250 to bury her for me. Then I went to a casket company. I walked to a casket company that manufactured caskets and put the other $100 of buying her a casket. Then I went and went downtown to 5 and 10 cent store and bought her a gown and a head rag. And I found the importance of black folk being deprived, the importance of black folk being not having any wealth and the money when they pass on this earth. And the last and more important thing, mm-hmm. to answer your question, it's a long answer, but I had to walk past the prison camp right there on 9th Street and Liberty in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And that's where they stored the prisoners, the German prisoners at that time.
Ah.
Those prisoners were there because America had captured a submarine off the coast of North Carolina. They had over 260-some German prisoners there. And walking past that prison as a young man, and I was about 14 or 15 then, walking past that prison, they would drop their pants and pat their butts and give us the finger and try to spit on us.
Wow.
And try to spit on us. Mm-hmm. When I go downtown, guess what? There are the German prisoners down there sitting in the best restaurants and going to the theaters with the whites. They can have liberty weekend and go intermingle with whites. And while black soldiers off in Germany and Europe getting killed and slaughtered, they get lynched coming back to America and for having fought the wars for this nation, while the German prisoners were treated as first-class citizens. When the war ended, most of those German prisoners didn't even return to Europe. They stayed here as first-class citizens. So I learned the importance of this country's immigration policies and how they were negative for black folk. And that those policies have been in place since 1790, and that's what's happening to black folk right now. And you have no black overclass that will address the negative impacts of immigration on black folks. It's been going on since 1790 up to the present day.
Doc, that's it. That's what we're talking about. You bringing it. I want you to stand by as we prepare to take a break, and then we'll be black on the other side of the break with more of you. All right? You there, Doc?
Yes, I am,
All right, we'll see you on the other side of the break. You're on hold.
Okay.
I'm Slaughter. I'll be black in a minute with more of this thing called The Movement on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. News and Talk 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community. It's your brother, Dr. F.T. Slaughter, up in here making this thing do what it do on a jazzy Thursday. Beneath me, that's some of that Lonnie Liston Smith. You know what I'm talking about? All right. On my black line, I got my dear brother, big uncle, Dr. Claude Anderson. Doc, you got big uncle status on the movement, man. You with us every day, whether you know it or not, because we continually engage this powerful, powerful text.
I love you all for that, and I appreciate that, and I want you to be a part of this new movement. And I'm gonna begin pushing as of 2019 year.
You want to debut it right now?
Yes, let's do it.
Go ahead. Well, hit us then. Do it.
Okay, based on my total experiences in all levels of government and politics and education and business and everything else,
mm-hmm.
and watching the total abandonment of black folk by the black overclass, and black folk are now swimming and being set up to be eradicated and victimized off the face of the earth. And I said, I'm going to start what's called a Us Too movement to counter all these other movements in the country. And it's Us Too, the movement will be based on the exceptionality of black folk, which
Us
is something they've never proclaimed. They are exceptional, special people on this earth. And I want them to wake up and smell it during coffee and quit listening to fake news.
Yes.
And this movement will be starting, you know, as of this month. And I want you all to be a part of it. And it's going to be built around those five books I wrote. That's unlike any books that ever been written in this nation by blacks or white authors. Five books that are vertically integrated, going from the first one being The Black Labor, White Wealth, that shows you in very minute terms with timelines, showing you every trick, technique, public policy and law, and trick that whites use to put you at the lowest level of a real-life monopoly game.
Mm-hmm.
Then Powernomics on top of that, the next book, which is also the best-selling classic around the world.
Got that.
It's a national plan to empower black folk.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's two books over that. It's called Dirty Little Secrets about Black History, Black Heroes, and Other Troublemakers. There'll be 1,000 little short stories that show you things that nobody's ever told you about the importance of black folk in the world. and that show you that nothing has happened that black folks were not directly involved in or caused. And that's what those two dirty little secrets book about. The last book in that library pack is called The Black History Reader. And any blacks that get those five books, if you don't have those five books in your library or in your home, then you don't have a home, you don't have a library, because there's no way you're going to ever figure out how you got where you are, what's been keeping you where you are for 460 years, and why you can't get out of it. Those five books are written exclusively, and they will outdo any books that have ever been written by blacks or whites to show you what the nature of the problem is. And that's the foundation and the basis of a new movement called the Us Two Movement, which excludes. It has nothing in the world to do with horizontal issues like what political party, what school you graduated from, what your class is, or about ethnic groups or gender or trigender or migender, anything else, handicap, peg leg, wooden leg. People with hemorrhoids or anything else. It deals with black folks.
Look, this is what we want to do. Though here, the movement family, the name of this show is The Movement with Dr. F. Keith Slaughter, and we're trying to move on something. We want in on this Us Two movement. We're going to have to talk about how to integrate what we're doing here in Atlanta to what you're doing. And you're in D.C., correct?
Yeah, and but to tell you, but somewhere around February, if I pull my little monies together, I'm planning on having a major meeting at about the top 60 to 100 blacks across this country, like yourself. We're gonna come together. We're gonna strategize and how we're gonna set up a whole new network across the country.
Well, we won't in. We won't in.
I expect you to meet. If you're not there, you're gonna get a country ass whipping.
I can take it, man. I've been beat down a few times. I'm kind of used to it. Anyway, I got some questions that I collected from some of our loyal listeners who got in early and wanted you to address a couple of things. Specifically, this question comes from Brother Gregory. He wants to know, how will the prison industrial complex impact black people for 2019 going forward as relates to this new First Step Act?
Well, right now, if you don't follow this new Us Two movement, water will continue to run down the hill the way it's always run down, a straight line. It's not going to change. It's going to change nothing. Well, all you'll be doing is probably, even though it would be a positive step to some degree, on a scale of 1 to 10, it'll be like a 1 or 2 step on a 10-step program. But it will not effectuate what causes the problems. Because what it's doing is that it would be majoring in the minors, digging in the minutia, messing with things, the symptoms, messing with the wrong end of the horse, rather than trying to deal with black folk in the prison system. Coming out, you need to start dealing with the head of the horse and try to stop and be prophylactic and stop the things that are causing to be wound up in the prison system. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference between things I talk about in my books and in my movement, is that you got to deal with the causes rather than the symptoms. Mm-hmm. Our people have been brainwashed and bamboozled into always dealing in the minutia, in dealing with the end, the symptoms, anything that's symptomatic. Why are there so many blacks in prison in the first place? Mm-hmm. It was initially they were doing it from slavery and all the way through segregation, using black folk to generate wealth, power, and comfort for whites. But you've never changed the conditions. For instance, as very quickly, I'm giving you a long answer, but
that's good. Quickly, go ahead, please.
For instance, there's a direct connection between having business ownership and being in prison. Mm-hmm. There's a direct connection between having business ownership and being on the unemployment rolls. There's a direct connection between having wealth and power and being in politics. But black folk never understood that. So let me go back for a second with the prison system now. Mm-hmm. Like take Asians. Asians right now, 1 out of every 10 Asians, Dr. Slaughter, 1 out of every 10 Asians are in business. Mm. That, therefore, you go to the prison system, you're not going to find any Asians in prison. Very few. And same thing with Arabs. They're not going to wind up in prison because they get wired. Because they're a ratio of ownership in business, where you got 1 out of every 10 Asian in business. You got 1 out of every 34, 35 whites in business. 1 out of every about 50 to 60 Hispanics in business. But you find 1 black out of every 110, 120 damn blacks in business.
So you know what? That's a good seg into another question that one of our callers had. This sister, Sister Tina, asked, how can we organize ourselves to produce more corporations or industry out of the black community? And how can we engage capitalism more effectively?
She has an excellent question. And she should have been a civil rights leader. And she did a bit proud of more leadership than what we got now. That's an excellent question.
Yes,
it's very
Tina.
Simple. Mm-hmm. Because right now, black folks are not in the business. Black folk need, it's very easy. It's not rocket science for blacks to start a business. But the first thing you must do is have a darn community. You're mm-hmm. the only population group in the entire United States that does not have not one single community. Mm-hmm. You cannot go into business effectively and be competitive if you don't have a darn community. Because if you don't have a community, you don't have a market.
So how do you define community?
The community, very simply, what you all keep calling communities in Atlanta or any place else, those are not communities. Those are neighborhoods. A neighborhood is where you eat and sleep.
Mm.
A neighborhood is like a bucket with a hole in it. You keep pouring something in it, and the water runs right out. Well, a community, it must have three key elements to be classified as a community.
Mm-hmm.
You must first have a wholly independent or alternative economic structure, point one. Point two, you must have a code of conduct that tells you who to support, why you support, who you buy from, and who you support and care and do business with. And thirdly, you must have elected officials that will represent you above all others and put your interests first and foremost. Those are the three elements that will define a community. What you got are neighborhoods. That's why you go from the East Coast, you go from the West Coast. Every group coming to this country, the Asian, Arabs, Hispanic, whatever they are, the first thing they would do is to build a community. Community means people who have the same interests you have, the same needs you have, the same common experiences that you have, and the common goals that you have. Black folk are the only people that don't have that for a number of reasons. First of all, because they were deprived. They don't own and control a darn thing of importance.
Mm.
It's wealth, but wealth decides your opportunities and your equality, not social integration or civil rights.
Yeah, black folks be owning debt.
That's what I'm saying. That's totally useless.
Yeah.
But they've been bamboozled to think that somehow social integration and civil rights are going to save them. It's what you own and control. That's why all the other groups are going to do you in Atlanta.
If I come
to Atlanta right now, I'll bet you I can find Asian community, Hispanic communities, Arab communities, white communities. I can find everything but a darn black community. All I'll find out there are blacks scattered. Ooh. Integration is a weakening, scattering process.
You ain't lied yet. Listen, I need you to hold on, stand by. We got a radio hour that we're dealing with. We're going to take a couple of, we're going to do a couple of these things we do to make this thing work. And we're coming back to Dr. Claude Anderson, and we're going to segue into another question from another one of our callers. And you were already touching on it in your last comments, and we're going to deal with it when we get back on the other side of the break. Thank you, Doc, for holding on. I'll be black when I get back with more of this thing called The Movement on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. News and Talk 1380 WAOK. The voice of the community. It's your brother, Dr. F. Keith Slaughter, with a special edition of The Movement. Yeah. That's some of that Tom Brown. Y'all don't know nothing about that. 404-892-2703 is my number. I'm in the middle of a conversation with the esteemed author and community activist, scholar, and even more, Dr. Claude Anderson. Doc, when we were headed out on the other side of the break, when we head out on the other side of the break, were headed toward a question. We got one of my favorite listeners or loyal listeners by the name of Tabakuti, was interested in engaging you around question number 17, which is, why did the founding fathers use ambiguous terms to refer to black people in the U.S. Constitution? And also question number 25, which is, where is that? Question number 25, here it goes. What is the doctrine of unequal exchange? And is it still being applied to black people in the black race? And he wanted to ask the question in relation to those particular questions, why are black politicians refusing to specify their commitment to black people after receiving our votes? What are your thoughts on these politicians?
Okay, do me a favor. Give them to me one at a time. After I, let me respond to one at a time, and you, because I can't remember all three of them.
Okay.
But the first thing you asked me about was about the
question number 17, which has to do with the ambiguity in language that is used, that was used in the Constitution that you lift up in your book.
Right. Well, that was used specifically and solely for the purpose of being able to strip black folk of something that they've never been able to recapture. It was to strip them of their social cohesiveness. Mm. And that most black authors and writers, they don't understand that. But that's it. That was the purpose. Slavery had two purposes. One was to deny you and strip you of any resources where you cannot own and control anything by classifying you as property. Property cannot own property. Therefore, you were not entitled to anything. You were entitled to privileges, rights, anything. You were stripped of everything by calling you property. And the second thing it was done to strip you of your social cohesiveness so you could not come together as a team.
Right.
That's why in the Constitution, when you hear all of our leaders for all these years and centuries keep talking about they had rights in their constitutional rights. The Constitution gave blacks no rights. They were defined in a way to make sure they could not come together. When the convention met in 1789 in Philadelphia to write the Constitution, to craft and finalize it by Madison and Jefferson, the biggest question was, how do we craft a document that promises and commits to give all, to be the cradle of democracy, that all people, use the word all people and all this kind of stuff, and at the same time we get ready to enslave 5 million black folk.
Right. It's just the ultimate of hypocrisy, you know, just...
Right.
Just
so what we'll do then, let's use a coded language and instill that in the Constitution, and that will exclude black folk. So whenever you read the Constitution, say, we the people, all the people, the American people, they were not talking about black folk. They said, you want to talk about black folk, you use very broad, ambiguous terms, and always use that. And when you talk about black folk in the Constitution, there are two constitutions. The first one was in 1789, and the second one was in 1860. But anyway, the first constitution, when you want to find black folk, it says things like, those people, that specific kind of property, those who are indebted, those in bondage, those who are equal to a field animal, those who are three-fifths of a human being.
Right.
They use broad terms, but you cannot get civil rights. Please understand this. Black folk had no rights. That's why they couldn't get any property. They were not classified as citizens. When it says we the citizens, they're talking about black folk. Black folk did not become citizens until 1860. And so that's why they use those very broad, ambiguous terms in historically. That's why they again try to use them after the Civil War. And lastly, that's why they keep using them today in the black civil rights movement that occurred in the 1960s. That civil rights movement, they use the same broad, ambiguous terms.
Okay.
They use things like they switch them and start calling you all people of color.
Right.
So diversity, multicultural, minorities, poor people, socially disadvantaged. They use these broad terms, and now we got leadership that couldn't work their way out of a third grade education, keep buying into these philosophies, and get on TV and radio and always talking about we represent minorities, poor folk, and all that. Now, all those words are designed to make black folk disappear and impossible to be included.
And you know, it was done so subtly, though. You know, because a book I published, Therapeutic Dimensions of Black Preaching, and that was the title that I wanted to use. But the publisher wanted to add and did ask, and its impact on a people of color. You know, that wasn't my idea. That was my publisher's idea, and I went along with it, not being clear at the moment at what he was up to.
But for now, you always going to be clear from now because you got it.
Oh, I got it now. It won't happen again, and the next one that comes out is going to be it ain't going to have that in it. You can believe that. The second part of Tabakuti's question was about the doctrine of unequal exchange that you introduced, this idea.
Right. Very, very important. Black folk, and along with the doctrine of exchange, you are now classified also, you've been classified since slavery as the third rail. You're the third rail in the country, in this country. That's why nobody would do anything for you. That's why they put the Second Amendment in the Constitution. You are the third rail, just like in a railroad system. The third rail carries the power and the wealth. They keep it covered up to make sure because it's dangerous. That's why you're a third rail. But the doctrine of exclusion came in the 1500s. The doctrine of exclusion was the thing they first started practicing when they said, when they decided they were going to, after Pope Innocent had declared a new kind of slavery in the country in about 1488. When the 15th century turned, they started a doctrine of unequal exchange,
mm-hmm.
which means go pick up black folk and begin to use them and give them nothing in return. They started picking black folk up off the coast of Africa and selling them for buying them for $25 or for cloth or some anything and selling for 15%.
That leads us, Doc, into the third part of the question, which I really want you to hit, which is has to do with, does that same kind of ideology impact the way black politicians are refusing to specify their commitment to black people after receiving our votes now, the doctrine of unequal exchange?
That's right. So you're still getting it. That's why you lost all your music. That's why you lost all your baseball teams, your basketball teams, your football teams. That's why you lost your black schools. That's why you lost your black communities. That's why you also lost your communities. It was under the doctrine of unequal exchange. Sometimes he's called it urban renewal and urban to take blacks out. Now they're going to be called it gentrification. They're going to gentrify you and privatize every major city. You're going to get nothing for it, unequal exchange. You're going to give up everything you ever had. That's why you don't have black schools anymore, black communities. Social integration was a doctrine of unequal exchange, where you gave up everything and got nothing in return. And so the civil rights leaders went along with the elected officials going along with it. They were convinced after this 1965 civil rights law that at this point white folk were sick and tired and never going to do anything for black folk. And so your leadership gave in to the realities of racism, saying, well, you might as well just join us and start looking out for everybody. And so you civil rights leaders got to make civil rights apply to everybody. And as a matter of fact, to be more specific for you, in 1982, when Ronald Reagan came into office as president, and I was leaving the Carter administration, I was about the last one to leave the administration, mm-hmm. as an assistant secretary, and Haldeman was called into Reagan's office. He told me, one thing I want you to do, and remember this, he says, when you start talking about black people in this country, do not say anything negative about them publicly. See, always, when you're going to talk about them, always use very broad and ambiguous terms, like minorities and poor people and people of color. He said that way, he said it jigs, not ends now. He said jigs would never know the difference. He said they're not smart enough to know the difference. Just use those very broad terms so they're foolish enough to think that somehow they're going to be included.
Well, Dr. Anderson, stand by for me because we got a hard break we're up against. When we come back, we're going to continue with Dr. Claude Anderson for our final segment with him. And so I'm going to try to get a couple of more questions in, a couple of your questions in, and have him to answer them. My name is Slaughter. This is The Movement. That's Dr. Claude Anderson on my black line. I'll be black when I get back with more of this thing called The Movement on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. News and Talk 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community. Man, we're in our final segment of the hour. Dr. Claude Anderson has been so gracious as to kick it with us for an entire hour. Nowhere else, no other show, nobody else got it like that. Because this is The Movement, baby. That's how we get down. Dr. Anderson.
Yes, sir.
See, they don't understand, man, how we get down. You know what I mean? Where else in the whole wide world you just drop it for an entire hour, rapid fire, nonstop? I mean, it's a blessing, and we appreciate it.
Well, do me a favor. You get a chance, give us a number of how to get in touch with you and invite you to this movement with this big major meeting that's going to be probably coming off in February if we get the capital to be able to pull it off, okay?
No doubt about it. We're going to make it happen. We're going to make it happen. All right, I got a couple of more questions from you. These come from our interactive listeners who kick it with us on our Facebook page. You know, and I'm going to tell you, Doc, if it's one thing, you know, most of the stuff, I agree with you anyway, because it just makes sense and is right. But sometimes I feel like, and I'm just being honest and transparent, sometimes I feel like you real hard on black folks, you know. So Nicole is asking the question, are black people doing anything right?
Yes, they are doing it right, but they don't get credit for it. That's your problem.
Okay.
And because they've been enculturated to do to exercise inappropriate behavior, and that's a part of our problem.
Say more about that.
Because right now everybody plays as a team, and that racism is a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
You either play as a team or you lose by default. It's just like basketball, football, and baseball. You play as a team.
Mm-hmm.
Black folk have been acculturated to engage in individualism, to always try to be the special individual by themselves and to do things that they can make it by themselves and to join with whites. They want to join the white. It's the same thing they had during slavery.
Mm-hmm.
They're blacks who, instead of being field blacks, they want to go become a house black and join and live inside the house with the white master. What I'm telling black folk is, yes, we got opportunities, but we're engaging over too much in trying to engage and be acceptable to other groups and get along with them rather than being responsible and feeling some recognition and responsibility for our own group.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the inappropriate behavior comes from. Social integration is a de-aggregated. It makes you disappear. It makes you vanish. You
mm-hmm.
give up all your opportunities, you give up your rights, you give up all your credits, the things you've done in this society. And for that reason, yes, I'm hard on black folk, and I'm supposed to be. I'm going to call them out, and I'm going to embarrass as many of them as I can to run them out of a hole and make them start identifying with their own people, buying from their own people, servicing their own people first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to get along with the whole world, that's fine. They can keep going. We're doing what they've been doing for the last 460 years. I'm only ism I'm into is our-ism, black-ism. And that's it, period. And I'm not into horizontal issues. So any blacks in horizontal issues, yes, I'm against them.
I feel you. But can you answer what we're doing right? What are we doing right so we'll know to keep on doing that?
We're doing right, for instance, black folk right now, the understanding, first of all, that they are exceptional people. They're not like any other people on this earth, in this nation.
Mm.
Black folk are totally different. They're not African Americans. They are black Americans. Once you start
right.
calling yourself something other than black, you lose your credentials. You lose your credit for everything. What you do, you play into the hands of the white racist that says that black folk are no different and never been treated different than any other group. That's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest lie ever told, Dr. Slaughter, was that all people have contributed equally to the development of this country. That's a lie. Black folk were the major people. They picked the cotton, the rice, built the roads, the highways, the bridges.
No doubt.
And all this. Did all this and built the schools. They were the people that worked hard. They were the labor class. They were entitled to be recognized. And any black person who doesn't understand that and wants to say, well, I'm an African American. Every person living in America is an African American. When you come from Africa, you come to America, you're an African American. We had cases in court that has proven that to black folk over and over again. Your blackness is your code of conduct. Your blackness is your badge of honor. It's your historical experiences. It's what you
yeah.
should be credited with.
Yep.
If you don't use the word native black Americans, then white folk and I feel any obligation that they owe you anything, because they don't owe anything if you came from Africa or the Caribbean. Blackness and native black Americans are special people. So I identify with those special people who understand the power of their blackness and going to stick together and play as a team in a race-based society. They are a team.
Well, let me ask you this last and final question, I think, Doc. And, you know, with this year being the 400th year commemoration of the enslavement of black people in America, what significance, if any, does this particular observation hold for black people?
This should be the year. They got to do something this year. This got to be the year for blackness, for black folk to go back and proclaim themselves. And like in immigration, immigration is a negative for black folk. The first policy ever enacted in the 1790s, the year after the Constitution was established, was that this would be a white nation where anybody could come to this country and get free land and free labor except black people. And so immigration is a negative. And you got all these people now supporting immigration for everybody, identifying with all these fabricated groups, minorities, poor folk, women, gender issues. And you said, well, Dr. Anderson, you're against them. Yes, I'm against them. I place black folk to the highest possible level, to be as black as you want to be and take care of your own people. And if you don't do that this year, you're setting yourself up to be eradicated from face of the earth. You got to read a book called Hitler's Willing Executioner that came out in the 1950s. It says when these kind of conditions appear, that a minority is being set up. When all of a sudden nobody talks about you, nobody includes you in anything, they use very broad, ambiguous terms, and all of a sudden, and your leadership will abandon you to represent other groups. And this is a guy named Neil Goldhagen, wrote a book, and that big, thick book, said that when he studied the extermination of Jews across Europe during the World War, during the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And in this country, I'm concerned about black folk, and I fight for them, and I'm unapologetic about fighting for black folk. If some people think I'm too hard on black folk, I can live with it. I'm going to stay on them until they come out of the hole and start sticking up for their own people, buying from their own people, and supporting their own people first and foremost. Not to hate anybody else, but buy from their own people. That's what this movement is about. And they want this book, but want to be a part of this movement, tell them to go buy the library pack. They can get the library pack, which is 5 books and a DVD. It's for $99. They tell them to go to thepowernomics.com and get those books. We're going to have a major movement in this country that's going to try to keep black folk competitive and active, and together as a team across this nation, we're going to stick up for our own people first and foremost. Before, we're not going to hate anybody else, but racism is a team sport, and we're going to learn to play as a team.
There
again,
you
go. Get the Power Economics Library Pack.
Us too, no doubt. All right, Dr. Claude Anderson, we appreciate you, man. It was a beautiful conversation, and thank you for sharing all that you did with the movement family today. And the next time you're in the A, let us know so we can get you in the studio. And I'm down for the conference that you got coming up in February. JD will be reaching out to get that information.
That's only how we can catch up with you, though, because we're going to be inviting you specifically to come and join us with all the other key people like you across the country, okay?
All right. Just hold on, and we make sure you get my number, okay?
All right. Thank you now, and have a good day.
Bless you, man. Ladies and gentlemen, sisters and brothers, Dr. Claude Anderson. And that's how we do it on The Movement. The blackest show on radio. Trafficking in truth telling. It's The Movement with your brother on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
It's your boy Eldridge Washington, a.k.a. Made Man. I just want to say I am down with The Movement with Dr. F. Keith Slaughter because he is what the peach is to Georgia, the apple is to New York, and the wind is to Chicago on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.